All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru Nanda. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Namah Om Shivaya. Krishna Prasaya Vitoya Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Chinamani. Namaste Sarasati Deva Gauravani Pratarani Vasesa Sinavai Vaska Chandra Satani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Utah Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavasham. Sri Rupam Sadhurjatam Saganam Raghunatham Vitam Samasajitam. Sadvaitam Sadhritam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Sri Radha Krishna Padam Saganam Vitam Sri Vishakam Vitam Sham. Panchakapa Chudis Chakri Bhisthan Devata Patitanam Mahane Yom Vaishnavayam Namah. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it is May 23rd, 2022 in Hillsboro, North Carolina. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 36. Text 9. So we're very close to the end of Vrindavan Leela here. We are really, really close here. Sopyeva kopito rishta. Kurena vani udikan. Ucha pucho pamanega. Kruda Krishna Mupadravat. Sa. He. Api. Indeed. Aham. In this way. Kopita. Anger. Arishta. Arista. Kurena. With his hoof. Avani, the earth. Udikan, scratching. Udyat, raised. Pucha, within his tail. Raman, wandering. Megaha, clouds. Krudha, furious. Krishna, toward Lord Krishna. Upadravat, he charged. PET translation. Thus provoked, Arista pawed the ground with one of his hooves, and then, with the clouds hovering around his upraised tail, furiously charged Krishna. So, he was big. That's it. He puts his tail up, and it's in the clouds. So I don't know if that's literal or just a poetic way of saying that he was really, really big. All right, so there's no BBT purport. It's a very, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami each have extremely short purports that just say his tail was big in the clouds. So we're going to read Sanatana Goswami's commentary. He says, Arista was the very form of inauspiciousness, Arista. Who no one could oppose. With his upraised tail, he made the clouds move here and there by touching them or by the tail's wind. So that indicates not just his size, but his power. The tail was hard, long, and strong. He ran at Krishna, who attracted him by inciting his anger. Or Krishna attracted him by striking his heel on the ground to show his great courage and pride. So not only did Arista put his foot on the ground, but Krishna also put his heel on the ground. This produced Arista Kunda. It is said, Gata vidva tatas tasmin aristam vrisha rupinam. Vrisha is a bull, so rupinam, vrisha rupinam, the form of the bull. Kopena parshi gatena mayas tirtam pravititam. He struck Arista in the form of a bull, Then in anger he struck the earth with his heel. This produced the Tirtha. This is from the Adivrama. The demon approached Krishna with great speed. So bhagavan kopito vista purana van mulikam uja pucha pramanega. Mega means a cloud. Kuda Krishna upajavat. Thus provoked, Arista pawed the ground with one of his wings, and then, with the clouds hovering around his upraised tail, furiously charged Krishna. So, as I'm sure you all know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes about how each of these demons are their literal beings, but they also symbolize something. I mean, we talk about that in terms of other people. Oh, this person is the epitome of kindness, or this person is the epitome of heroism, right? We talk about people like that. So Bhaktivinoda is saying each of these demons epitomizes or personifies a particular anartha. And for Aristasura, it's pride arising from indulging in false religions invented by cheaters that cause neglect of bhakti. So Aristasura is pride arising from indulging in false religions that cause neglect of bhakti. So we're going to focus on this, how Arista is this Vrisha Rupa. He has the form of a bull. So we have a saying in English, a wolf in sheep's clothing. Right? Wolves, they eat sheep. One of the main duties of a shepherd is to guard against wolves eating the sheep. Wolves, other animals, coyotes, whatever, foxes. And they have sheep herding dogs, which both help them keep the sheep in line and also can scare away these other predators. So we're going to look at the fact that generally a bull is very auspicious. Yeah? Generally a bull is very auspicious, but that Aristasura is not a real bull. He has a Vrisha Rupa, but he's not actually a real bull. He's representing a false system that appears to be bhakti but is against bhakti. And then we'll look at the fact that when these false systems are defeated, a tirtha is created, auspiciousness is created by the destruction of these false systems. So a bull is considered auspicious. Of course, in the modern world, in much of the modern world, they don't think of bulls as particularly auspicious. They eat them. The vast majority, overwhelming majority of bulls in the modern world are killed. They're killed and eaten. So people don't see them as an object of reverence. At the same time, bulls are also, there's some idea, even in the modern world, of bulls as being auspicious. You know, there's a bull market, it's a good market, right? A bear market, right now we have a bear market, for those of you who keep up with economics, and the stock market is going down and down. But if you go to Wall Street, there's a big sculpture of a bull. Charging ahead. Right? And there's many places I've gone in Europe where there's statues of a bull. Or some places there's statues of a cow. Even in the hospital, they have a big statue of a cow outside. So there's some concept, even in the modern world, that bulls are auspicious. And of course, in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, we had Maharaj Rikit, who was defending a cow and a bull against Kali. And the bull was the epitome of religion. Now, how did Rikit know? This is also interesting, and it very much relates to this particular pastime, that how did Rikit know that the bull was the personification of religion? What was the test? Yes, he refused to blame Kali. Who was standing right there? Imagine this, okay? Somebody's beating you, breaking your legs. The police come, and they look at you, and they say, "Who's beating you?" And you say, "Well, that's a very hard question to answer, even though your perpetrator is standing right next to you with their stick in their hand." And you say, "That's a very hard question to answer." Some people say that we are suffering due to our own previous karma. Some people say that the Lord is making us suffer for some higher purpose. Some people say that there is no such thing as suffering. All suffering is an illusion. Some people say that we have no idea what causes suffering. It's just inscrutable. I think that's about 7 different answers that the bull gives. And Mara Turkid says, yes, one who identifies the perpetrator is as guilty as the perpetrator. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't put criminals in jail. It's not what it means. Criminals should be put in jail or punished in some way, given community service or put into jail or executed. But it means that we don't wish ill for perpetrators. The purpose of putting a criminal in jail or giving them community service or executing them is for their purification and for the safety of society. But without any malice toward the perpetrator. As soon as one has malice toward the perpetrator, one is themselves a perpetrator. And this is a very difficult thing to understand because almost all conditioned souls have malice towards those who apparently are hurting them. So this one very nice devotee, he never got initiated, but he's a very solid devotee. I've talked about many, many times. And he had given a couple $1,000 to the temple in Hawaii towards his life membership, and the president of the Hawaii temple had taken his money and put it in his own pocket and stolen other money from the temple and left. And when this devotee went to Srila Prabhupada to complain, Prabhupada said, "Never hate the agent of your karma." And it was something that really affected him. You know, so why am I suffering? It may appear that Mr. So-and-so, Miss So-and-so is the cause of my suffering. I mean, many times it looks exactly like that. It's like, wait a minute, this is very obvious. And this person is the cause of my suffering. Everything was fine. And then this person, or this being, this mosquito, this dog, whatever, caused my suffering. However, if anyone could cause my suffering without my deserving it, the universe would be unfair. Am I correct? If I had the ability to cause you suffering that you didn't deserve, then, you know, the universe would be unfair. So the agents of our suffering and the agents of our benefits are actually just delivery persons. They're postal workers, UPS workers. You know, I place an order online, right? I place an order online for something, and then the delivery person delivers it, and if I order the wrong thing, that's on me. It's not on the delivery person. You know, Michael was talking about this yesterday. When we apparently hurt others, we only hurt ourselves. And Prabhupada talks about this in the conversation. He says, "You fool, you can't do any harm to others. You only harm yourself." And then it comes back to us. Yes, or another answer is sometimes it isn't karma. Sometimes the Lord puts a person in difficult situations for a beneficial reason. Just like parents do things with their children that their children don't like. You know, you have to go to school, and the child says, "This is a punishment. Why do I have to go to school? I just want to play." You have to say you're sorry to your brother that you hit over the head with your fire truck. You know, "And my parents are punishing me," or "You can't have your cookies when I eat with the family." You know, this is a common, right? "I want a cookie." You know, "But you have to eat your meal first." I'm not hungry. I don't want to eat my meal. I want a cookie. And to the child, the parents are cruel. The child can't understand. I'm allowed to eat cookies. There must be nothing wrong with cookies. So why am I restricted? At first I have to eat my beans, and then I can eat my cookies. Cruel, cruel parents. So sometimes our suffering is given by God and appears to be cruel, and it's not. And on the other hand, there is no suffering. There is no such thing as suffering. Actually, the soul has no suffering. It's our identification with this world and our attachment to this world that gives us an illusion of suffering. So for all of these reasons, why would I hate the apparent perpetrator? When one gives a different story about one's life, then there is no suffering. It's the stories we tell about our life. You can say, well, you know, if I break my arm, that's objective suffering. But actually, it's not. It's how we think about it, how we process it, whether or not we perceive it as suffering. And so this way he knew that his bull was born. So in general, bulls are considered auspicious because they plow the land. They give us food, they're like a father. The cow and the bull are supplying us with food, the cow with milk, the bull with grains. And all the products of their body are auspicious. Their urine is auspicious. Their stool is auspicious. After they die, their skin, their hooves, their horns, everything is auspicious. I mean, the products of the cow and the bull are so auspicious that we can use them in the deed. But even more so, this particular bull who said, I don't hate the perpetrator, I don't name the perpetrator, is the personification of religion. So it's very, very common that if the demon wants to cause trouble, they appear as a holy person. Ravana did this when he wanted to kidnap Sita. He put on the guise of a holy person. Indra did this, for Indra's not a demon, but when he was taking Prithu's sacrificial horse, he dressed up like a sannyasi, and although Indra is not a demon, he's also not a sannyasi. So he pretended to be something more saintly than he is. And last time I looked at the statistics, which was many years ago, it was that about 2,500 crimes every year in the United States are committed by criminals who dress as police officers. And this is a common tactic of a criminal. They'll put on a uniform of a guard or an employee, and this way they can make their way into the place they want to steal. Yes, everybody knows this. And we were saying yesterday, you know, that people appear to be what they're not. They'll appear to be, you know, some old man in Eastern Europe pretends to be some young, beautiful woman and takes the money of men in other parts of the world. Yes, everybody knows this kind of thing goes on. So somebody who has a nefarious purpose puts themselves in the guise of something else. So someone who's very inauspicious puts themselves in the guise of somebody who's auspicious. And here particularly Bhakti Vinod says something that appears to be religion, but is actually opposed to bhakti. So there are many religions. We don't say, we shouldn't say, that, you know, if the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is the only real religion in the world. I had one of my godbrothers a few weeks ago send me a quote from Prabhupada about, you know, you have to be in the society of devotees to make advancement. And because he used the word society, this godbrother thought, well, he must be talking about the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And then I gave him a quote from Record Devotional. Prabhupada says, there are many societies of pure devotees, and one should be associated with such a society. You know, we have in our Prabhupada in the Chaitanya Charitamrita was establishing that ISKCON is a branch of the Chaitanya tree. He never said ISKCON is the Chaitanya tree. Like many years ago, I visited Manipur, where there's branches of the Chaitanya tree that are not coming through Bhakti Vinod or Bhakti Siddhanta at all. They're going through Narottama Das Thakur. And of course, in Orissa, there's many branches of the Chaitanya tree. You know, what to speak of in Bengal. And then besides that, there are three other bona fide Vaishnav Sampradayas. Right? I'm reading a book right now by an academic scholar who's also a devotee in the Vallabha Sampradaya in Pushyamarg. And Rupa Goswami mentions the Pushyamarg once in Bhakti Gosamrita Sindhu, where he equates it with the Pushyamarg and Bhakti are the same. And the book I'm reading is about Govardhan Hill. I didn't realize actually till reading this book how active the Pushyamarg is in the Govardhan area. Yeah, I mean, I knew that the Manipuri devotees were, that this branch from in Manipur with Narottama Das Thakur, you see the Manipuri devotees, especially, not ISKCON, the other branch, around Radhakund and Shamakund, very prominently. But evidently, Pushyamarg is very active, especially in Jatipur and Govardhan town, and they have many, many temples. I wasn't aware. Kind of interesting. But again, then there's the other Vaishnav Sampradayas. You know, I think most of us have been to South India, we've been to Tirumala, we've been to Sri Rangani, places associated with Ramanujacharya, and then there's Nimbarka Sampradaya, is much smaller, mostly in the Vrindavan area. Some maybe from the they chant Radhe Krishna, Radhe Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Radhe Sham, Radhe Sham, 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 Radhe. You sometimes hear those kirtans in the Vrindavan area. And then beyond that, Prabhupada would often say, we accept Jesus as our guru. Prabhupada sometimes in initiations, when he talked about the first offense on chanting, not blaspheming the devotees who dedicated their lives to the propagation of the holy name of the Lord, he would say, this means we shouldn't blaspheme Jesus and Muhammad. So any religion that's teaching bhakti, I mean, when the first time that I personally met Srila Prabhupada in the summer of 1974. I told this story many times, and my father asked Srila Prabhupada, may I come to this temple, even though I'm Jewish? This Krishna consciousness is not my religion. Just like there are temples in India, where if you're not a Hindu, according to their estimation, you can't come into the temple. Or like Mecca, you can't go in the whole city of Mecca unless you're Muslim. Not just the main shrine, but you can't even enter the city. So my father must have been thinking like that, you know, maybe it's not proper for me to come to the temple if I'm not a devotee. He later became a devotee of Krishna. But anyway, he was asking this. And Prabhupada said, yes, there are many here in Chicago, there are many planes going to Chicago. He said, well, what does it mean, many planes? They have to be going to Chicago. He said, so there can be many religions if they are all trying to know God and to love Him. And we could say that's what we mean by bhakti. To try to know God and to love Him. Now, we could also say that there are many Vedic religions in terms of the four main kinds of yoga: Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. The Karma Yoga tries to attain perfection by doing one's work in the world according to Varnashram, but for the purpose of liberation. Jnana Yoga is philosophical detachment. I will have neither attachment nor aversion for anything in this world. Jnana Yoga is meditation. But all three, karma, jnana, all have to have some admixture of bhakti in them or they're not effective. And this is because real religions, Vaikam Samparo Dhammo, Yato Bhakti Ahochade, Ahoitiki Apritiyata, Yad Yatma Supersediti. Real religion is only bhakti. You can perform Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Dhyana Yoga and reach the ultimate goal, but there has to be some bhakti. And why is this? Because reality is that there's God, there's living entities, and there's a loving relationship between them. And ignorance, avidya, irreligion, is when there's some break in that relationship. There's some obscuring of that relationship. That is avidya. That is ignorance. That is materialism. So many times the Shastra says, Sarvakalami Brahman, everything is Brahman, everything is spiritual. And Srila Prabhupada would say many times that to the advanced devotees there's no material world. There's one lecture we said it three times. There's no material world. For the pure devotees, there's no material world. material world is that I see things separately from Krishna. I don't see the relationship between things and Krishna. I don't see Krishna everywhere. And I can only see Krishna everywhere. Prayanjana Jita Bhakti Lojanina Santa Sadaya Rudaya Shudhiro Kanti Ashami Sundara Chinta Janasu. If I have love, if you don't like someone, you don't see their energy and their accomplishments. Am I correct? If we don't like someone, we minimize what they do. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati gives the example that your childhood friend becomes a high court judge. And you say, not possible. I knew him as a kid. No way. Not really, you know. I saw him in court sitting at the bench. Well, they must not be paying him. So you minimize someone. And if you don't have a loving relationship with God, then you say everything arose by chance or matter. Modern society is, the secularism means that you don't see the relationship of things to God. You don't see your life as related to God, and you don't see the world as related to God. You know, secularism is, okay, you can have your religion on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, or whatever, you know, every morning, but keep it private and keep it out of your life. Is it? Separating everything from God. And that is the definition of illusion. And it comes from a lack of love. Or it can be actual envy or actual hatred. You know, you see this like if a marriage dissolves, the people start, you never get anything. Or any kind of relationship, you never actually did anything. But I do this and this and this. Oh, and I was all self-motivated. Right? Did you hear people talk like that? You know, if they've dissolved a relationship with somebody. All those things that you did, actually, you were just trying to manipulate me. You were just trying to get something for yourself. Or they reinterpret everything in a negative way. So illusion is when one interprets the world as separate from Krishna, as non-loving. As a scary place, padam padam hadi padam. A place that there's always danger, there's always fear, there's always separateness. It's chaotic, it's random, it's chance. And love is, I see that there's a loving person who's managing everything, not a blade of grass moves. So that is why bhakti is the essence of religion. That's the reason. Because in order to see everything spiritually, and in order to get spiritual vision, I have to have appreciation and love for the essential truth of the world. Does this make sense to everybody? Yep. So without that, you can't have religion. A religion without God, or a religion without a loving God, or a religion without any personal God, it can't be religion. Because by definition, then, you're in illusion. But these, or even a religion that appears that, okay, there's a God, but it's all about getting things for myself from God. I go to God, you know, give me this, give me this, give me that. I have my shopping list. Like, you know, Prabhupada called them order suppliers. You know, Prabhupada used to run pharmacies. I'm sure he had companies from whom he placed orders. And they must have been called order suppliers. You know, so you place your order. I mean, nowadays we mostly do it online. Used to be you do it in a catalog, right? I used to have filing cabinets when I ran a school, filing cabinets full of catalogs from different educational companies. Now, of course, when you place an order, you have to also give money, isn't it? You can't, like, go to Walmart online and place an order and just write a little note, you guys are really cool. And then they'll send you your order for free. So a lot of people have religion like this. You know, you go to your place of worship and you go, oh, you're really glorious, God. All right, here's my shopping list. And then when you don't get the items on your shopping list, then there's no God. well, you hate God, probably talked about this in war, right? That in Germany, the women went to the churches, please bring back our husbands, our sons, you know, our fathers, and when they were killed in war, they became atheists. So this is not bhakti either. This is merchant relationship. And Krishna says those who have a merchant relationship, he says there's no dharma, there's no praying, there's no friendship. He said people who don't even pretend to love are better than the merchants in the name of love. So these are false religions. But they may appear to be religion. Just like this demon appears to be a bull. They look like religions and people become fooled. People think, well, this is my path of spirituality. Something that's voidous, that everything's void, or that everything's impersonal, or that God is my order supplier. Now, anything that becomes more about me and how I can exploit the world in the name of religion is the antithesis of religion. That is the essence of materialism. So that's actually inauspicious. And this demon was simply, he was a shapeshifter. You know, it's interesting, in every culture in the world, there's stories about demons that are shapeshifters, isn't it? Like werewolves or something. Because there are actually demons that are shapeshifters. Of course, demigods can also shapeshift. When Bali Maharaj's army was coming to India's capital, the demigods all shapeshifted and left the heavenly kingdom. And of course, Krishna does that. He has so many different incarnations and so on. Okay, now I'm a fish. Now I'm a boar. Now I'm a half man, half lion. Yes? So demons who have power can do this. Of course, they're doing it artificially. And as soon as they're killed, they can't maintain their artificial shape. So the demon appears to be auspicious, but actually he's inauspicious. Just like so many religions claim to be bhakti, and they are the antithesis of bhakti, in the name of religion, they bring you to deeper materialism. It's deeper materialism because you don't recognize it as materialism, and therefore the Nishapanishad is saying like this. You know, something that's materialism is bad, but materialism that looks like spiritualism is even worse. So when one defeats these systems, as Krishna did, Krishna in the process of defeating Arista, as Arista digs his own hoof into the ground, Krishna digs his own heel into the ground, and this creates a tirtha. This creates a holy place. So it creates auspiciousness when one exposes a system, a materialistic system, as being opposed to love. That creates auspiciousness. Now, what's the evidence? How do we know? So you remember we're talking about Dharma the bull. He doesn't identify the perpetrator. He's being assaulted. And he's not angry. He's not defensive. Here we see with Arista, Krishna challenges him, and this challenge makes Arista more angry. So this is a very good test. If you challenge a materialistic religion, a proponent of a materialistic religion, and they become angry, they become aggressive, that's not dharma. You follow? And we see, like religious fights, it's either between materialistic so-called religions, or it's between what we call prakritabhaktas, people who are in a bona fide system, but they personally are materialists. They're at a very low kanista level. So this fighting between, you know, the Sunnis and the Shiites and the Muslims and the Jews and the Catholics and the Protestants and this Protestant group and that Protestant group, that goes on between members of those groups that are materialistic. They're in a bona fide system, but they're doing bhakti mode of ignorance. So they're not really doing bhakti, you follow? And that can also be the case. A person can be just like, you can go to Harvard or Yale and spend all your time in drunken parties. And you don't graduate. You know, you're a student, at least for the time being, you're a student, and you're expected to graduate, but instead of doing your homework, you're just, you know, carousing. And eventually you get kicked out. But for the time being, it looks like you're a student. Well, I'm a student at Oxford, I'm a student at Harvard. So a person can be in a bona fide system of bhakti, but actually be a materialist. And this is the test. They identify the perpetrator, they're a separatist, they're violent, but Kapila Devi explains all this. They're very angry. Even God comes before them, and all they want to do is fight with him. All they want to do is terrify his devotees. Right? That's what Arista's doing. Look at this! He's in Vrindavan! And there's Krishna, and there's Krishna's Leelas! And Krishna's taking care of bulls. And he loves the bulls. Look at what an opportunity he has. And instead he just wants to fight and cause trouble, scare all the devotees, kill Krishna. So this is the test. And when such philosophies are defeated, then it creates a holy place. Now, the meaning of the word tirtha is also interesting. A tirtha literally means where a river becomes narrow. Like we used to live in Detroit. Detroit is French for the straits, where a river becomes narrow and you can cross it. It's a crossing place. You know, tirtha means particularly like in a river, but like you could, another example would be like a pass between the mountains, some place where you can cross. And a tirtha is a place where you can cross between materialistic consciousness and spiritual consciousness. Another analogy would be like, you know, you have a phone, but your phone has to connect to a network. Right? Sometimes we go someplace, we don't get any signal. Right? So with my phone, I can connect with somebody in California or somebody in Australia. It allows me to cross distances instantly. Correct? Yes? But I have to be in the right place. I have to be in a tirtha. I have to have a signal. So you can say our human body is like a phone. Our human body has the capacity to allow us to cross to the spiritual, but we have to be in a place where there's reception, where there's a tirtha. We have to be in a place where we can, or a situation. Of course, we can ourselves become a tirtha. We can become a walking tirtha. Or we can create a tirtha anywhere. But this is one way, by exposing the wolves in sheep's clothing. Of course, one has to again be very careful, because it's not that any religion that's different from us, or any religion that's a different branch, or this, is a cheating religion. That is not the case. But what we should look for is their bhakti? Is their bhakti? Is their understanding that there's a soul who has an eternal loving propensity, that there's God who has also an eternal loving propensity, and that perfection is the exchange of love between the two. And if that's there, then even the rituals, the dogma may be different, that's not important. And if that's not there, even if the apparent rituals and dogma are similar, even if it looks like a bull, then it is not bhakti. So we have, I think, like 2 or 3 minutes if anyone has questions or comments. Corrections. Yes, we should
read anything. I'm just thinking right now.
Anybody?
Processing.
Diamond?
No, but this is excellent class.
Thank you, Omar.
This is incredible, you know, because I have issues sometimes other, they are not following the system or whatever, or even criticizing religions, that they are not pure religions or whatever. So it just opened my eyes to, I mean, there are different ways of seeing it, I mean, like you have put it in.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. To the Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam.